Welcome to Weigh In Sports Talk. Today is Sunday, May 19th. Before we get started, here are a few reminders. We would love to hear from you, and here are several ways to weigh in. Call us at 646-716-5564, or join us in the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/Tarvino, or follow us on Twitter at Weigh In Sports. Now here's your host, Brian Tarvin, and co-host Trey Patterson. Let's weigh in.
Thank you, Michelle, for the introduction, and you'll be home tomorrow night, thank God. I'll get my wife back. Trey, how's everything going with you, buddy?
Oh, I mean, everything's great, man. How are you?
Oh, doing wonderful. We are the Staff Picks Show tonight on Blog Talk Radio, so thank you to Blog Talk Radio for noticing our show, and Trey, hopefully we can give them some good stuff. We've got a lot going on, you know, not as much as when football season is happening, but we will be breaking down some college football tonight, of course, like we always do. We're going to talk about Ohio State and Coach Urban Meyer. Does he have what it takes to get Ohio State back at the number one spot over an SEC team, Trey? It seems like here we are again, year after year, someone's trying to pick a non-SEC team to win the national championship, so we'll get our thoughts in just a few minutes. But first, you know, the NBA playoffs, we have the conference finals set now. The Indiana Pacers will play the New York Knicks. And then today, Memphis didn't show up, but they're playing the San Antonio Spurs. So what are your thoughts of the finals so far?
Well, I mean, you know, San Antonio, you know, did what you kind of thought the group of veterans would do. I mean, one of the things, Tarvin, that I was worried about with Memphis making it this far, this is their first time being in this kind of situation, would be, you know, how they react, because, you know, this is different. I know, you know, you say, okay, if we won a couple series already, you know, this team has what it takes. But, you know, they've lost Rudy Gay. They lost a premier scorer off their team. And now they're facing the San Antonio Spurs, who've been there and done that and have a ton of not only this, you know, Western Conference finals experience, Tarvin, but they have a ton of finals to experience. And these guys, they don't get rattled. They don't get worried when they're down by, you know, 10 or whatever it is. So Memphis losing this game has got to show a lot of resolve to come back and really sort of show San Antonio that they're not intimidated by this veteran group, this veteran team who's won championships.
Well, Trey, they're going to have to find a way to guard the perimeter. San Antonio today, believe it or not, 14 of 29 from the three-point line. And you know, that's under 50%, but when you look at Memphis, 5 for 12, that's a difference of 9 shots. 9 times 3 is 27 points. That's close to what they lost by. So I don't know what Memphis is going to have to do, because once you go outside and tighten up there, you leave the, you know, down low open, Trey. It's just going to be a game of adjustments. Memphis hasn't started off well in any series, actually. They were down 2-0 to the Clippers. But San Antonio is a little different team. I think they're the team, if you punch them in the mouth, you know, they're going to fall. So Memphis needs to come back. They have to have this game, too. I don't think San Antonio is going to win in Memphis, but you never know what can happen in San Antonio, Trey. I mean, how important is it that Memphis at least split this, you know, the first two?
Well, I mean, it's just so hard to have no momentum, you know, when you're down, you know, to be down 2-0. I mean, one of the great things about Memphis, Tarvin, is they're actually undefeated at home. Them and Indiana Pacers are the only two teams in the postseason who are undefeated. So if anybody can go down 2-0 to the San Antonio Spurs and then go home to win three games, I mean, you have those two teams still playing. So Memphis, they can do it, Tarvin, but then, you know, you don't want to have to do that. You want to be able to lose one of those games and still be up 3-2. So it's going to be very important for them to go ahead and split on the road, because not only that, Tarvin, but it sends a message to San Antonio, hey, this team can win on the road, and you know, there's a good likelihood that we'll be coming back to San Antonio. So for Memphis, Tarvin, I really think that it's very important they get it split here.
Well, I think it's very important, because if you look, if they lose this game too, I mean, they're going to have to beat the Spurs 4 out of 5. I mean, that's not going to happen. I mean, if you think about that, just think of it that way, Trey. You beat the San Antonio Spurs, the best team in the West, 4 out of 5 times, it's not going to happen. Memphis wins this game, it puts so much pressure on San Antonio. I don't think pressure will matter to San Antonio, really, because they're all veterans. But, you know, your home field advantage, home court advantage, just like the Pacers, I mean, you'll be favored probably in both of those games. So you could easily go up 3-1 on the Spurs before it goes back to San Antonio. And then you want to talk about pressure. But this San Antonio team is good. But if you look at the two, who can beat the Heat, like if they were going to play the Heat, I like Memphis' chances better. I think San Antonio's too old to run with Miami. But let's stop right there. Will Miami get past Indiana? That's a big question, Trey. Watching Indiana play last night, you know, they lost game five to New York, and they came back home to finish it off. I mean, this Indiana team, are they good enough to beat Miami, Trey?
You know, I mean, obviously anything is possible, but, you know, Dwayne Wade is still nicked up. I mean, if Dwayne Wade, say, goes over and really can't play well, then I do think this is really anybody's series. But with Dwayne Wade on the court, even if he's at 85%, This series really does match up well. I mean, you still have Indiana is not without their own injury concerns. I mean, George Hill, who's such an important player for that team, has, you know, missed time against the New York team, and so, you know, he has to be healthy for this series for them to have a shot. And so, Charvin, I think that, you know, the Pacers are going to take a game or two from the Heat, but I think overall, I think this is going to be a Heat-dominated series. The Heat have won so many games by over 10 points. I would expect to see Game 1 very similar.
Jonathan, you're looking at the Indiana-Miami Heat series. Tell me the keys to victory for Indiana in this series.
Indiana's got to be able to take one in Miami. You know, Indiana beat Miami 2 out of 3 times this year. Both of those wins were at home. They lost by 14 at Miami. So it's going to be it's very, very, very important, since Indiana's been so dominant at home, for them to get one on the road. I mean, we saw in the Atlanta series that they have a hard time playing on the road. You know, you need Roy Hibbert to definitely be a force. But Miami has proven that you can out-rebound them and beat them up in the paint physically, and they will still beat you. So, you know, Indiana, who does have some turnover problems, they cannot give Miami, who is the best team at turning defense into offense, any free chances. It ought to be a fun series. LeBron, did you guys hear LeBron's hissy fit today, by the way?
No. What happened?
Coach Vogel for the Pacers, when asked about the Heat, said they're another team on our way to a championship. Right? Nothing wrong with that statement, according to me and most of America. LeBron decided to go on a little bit of a rant, saying that the Heat aren't just another team. They're a great team, that they shouldn't be called just another team, yada, yada, yada. And I think that gives the Pacers some fire. I don't think that gives the Heat fire, because it makes the Heat come off as kind of cocky. So the Pacers, I think they're going to come out with some fire in Game 1. And if Miami doesn't show up like they did against the Bulls in Game 1, this could really flip the series.
Well, Trey, I don't know about you, but I'm so sick of LeBron James. I mean, he's a great basketball player on the court, but he's like a 12-year-old girl off the court, Trey. I know he's one of the players you love, but come on. If you're going to be in the presence of Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, even in the discussion, how long is it going to take him to grow up? I mean, this is almost every week LeBron's doing something stupid.
Well, I mean, LeBron, I mean, I really don't have a whole lot of problem with him coming out and saying that. I mean, you're talking about the guy who's won the MVP 4 times. I mean, do you think he has a right to say his team is elite? I think he does, and they're that good. I mean, they dominated. They set, you know, enormous game streaks this year.
Why does he care, though? Why does he care? I mean, why does he own everybody's words? Why is he not home practicing, resting, doing whatever? But anybody says something, here's LeBron coming out, having to cry about it. I mean, it's sad, actually.
Well, I certainly can see your point, Tarvin, but in this instance, I don't have much of an issue with it.
I mean, it'd be different if the Heat coach came out and said, look, Miami's team, they're not very good right now, we're going to beat them, something like that. But he just was making a general statement. Miami's another team. You can't treat Miami any different than you did the New York Knicks, any different than you did the Atlanta Hawks. It's another step. That's what he was trying to say. He didn't say that Miami wasn't an elite team. I mean, but see, LeBron's taking offense to everything, trying to use something. To me, it sounds like insecurity. And guys, I said it earlier, or last night, Indiana is going to beat Miami. and it's going to be in seven games, but it's going to happen, Jonathan. I just think the defense of Indiana is going to shut down Miami.
You know, I can't disagree with that statement because I have a lot of faith in the Pacers right now. You know, and Indiana played them so tough last year until LeBron became superhuman because Lance Stephenson gave him the choke sign. So I think what needs to happen, though, is Roy Hibbert needs to have a early, to, you know, that 99-01 with the Lakers, Roy with Shaquille O'Neal era right there. Hibbert needs to have that kind of series where he can drop 40 points, and then you have to start game planning for him, which leaves Lance Stephenson, who scored 25 against the Knicks, at least Paul George, George Hill's a three-point guy, at least all those guys open. I mean, Roy Hibbert's really got to come out and be dominant.
Hey, Tarvin, I think Fido's trying to get out over there, buddy.
Hey, Trey, take over for me just 1 second, please.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jonathan, so let me get this right. Are you predicting with Tarvin a Pacers win here?
You know, I would like to. I really would, but it's so tough for me to go against Miami when they're at home. You know, I could see it, though. I could see it. I'm not saying I see it, okay? I still think Miami is clearly the most dominant team in the NBA, and they should win this series in six. But if it goes the distance, I would not be surprised. A lot of people have this series going the distance. So I think if it does go to a game seven, and I think if Indiana stole one, I mean, I can see Indiana taking it, but I give them about a 50% chance.
All right. Well, I'm going to be clear in this. I don't think the Pacers win this series. I think the Heat win this in six. I think the Pacers are going to, struggle at times offensively against the Heat. I think the Heat are going to go on some pretty big runs. I think they'll have a couple of off games, and the Pacers play good enough defense to frustrate Miami in at least one or two games. But I can't see them, Jonathan, winning this series, especially in a Game 7 situation where the Heat have so much experience. I think if it does get to a Game 7, that's a strong, strong game for the Heat because of the just enormous amount of Game 7 experience the Heat have.
Can you imagine how bad the NBA is going to be mad, Trey, if Indiana and Memphis are in the conference or in the finals?
Oh, yeah.
Imagine the ratings, man. You know, and I want you to watch, we talked about that earlier, the officiating in these series. You know, I mean, I guarantee you it will not be Memphis and Indiana. The refs will not allow it. The NBA won't allow this. I mean, it has to be really Miami in these finals to get everyone to watch because I think Sonny said that there's so many closet LeBron James fans out there, it's sickening. So if San Antonio and Indiana is in the finals, I think the ratings will be low. If Memphis, Indiana, it'll be very low. So you have to have Miami. Even if it's Miami against Memphis, I think the ratings will be okay. But Miami and San Antonio is a dream matchup for the NBA, Trey.
Yeah, I mean, Miami and San Antonio is definitely what they're looking to do.
Well, Johnson, you want to throw in anything in the NBA right quick before we move on?
I honestly think Memphis and Miami is a dream matchup because it's the underdog against the big boys.
Okay. So that's a beauty, man. Everybody thinks different. That's a good thing here. Well, we're going off basketball real quick, and one thing I want to discuss tonight, and this is a hot topic. I'm going to go get to Ohio State in a minute. But first, you know, the 2014 football season, when it comes out, we're going to have a 14 playoff. And they're going to try to choose the panel who's going to be voting. Well, Trey, when I was looking at the coaches' statements this week, a lot of the coaches are upset because they want to be a part of choosing the Final Four. And do you let the coaches take part in this after you've seen the bias they've represented year after year, and they don't even watch the game? That's one of the arguments I had. What are your thoughts about coaches determining the Final Four?
Absolutely not, Tarvin. I think it's a terrible idea. I mean, one of the things that we've seen, Tarvin, and you and I have talked about this time and time and time again about the coaches' poll, is they don't watch any of the games, and they tend to vote very loyally to their own conference or their own friends. So, I mean, when you talk about a bunch of coaches voting for the Final Four who haven't seen, and let's say, Tarvin, that it's Ole Miss, that you got Hugh Freeze and he's on there, do you think he's watched one single Stanford game if Stanford's, like, number five in the country and, you know, one loss? I mean, do you think do you have any inclination that he would actually, you know, go to game tape and go, hey, this team is legit, you know, they should be in there? I just don't see that as a plausible scenario. I think if it's, you know, a two-loss LSU team at six or four, he's going to go with them because that's his conference mate. So I think that this needs to be not coaches, Tarvin. I think that's the safest bet.
And Jonathan, you know, I look at the coaches, and they do know about the teams they play. Just say Oklahoma is playing Miami, and they understand that during the season they had to prepare for them, and they see what kind of team Miami has. But do you really think Bob Stoops, after watching him put Northern Illinois 25 last year just so he would make a BCS bowl, would you like him voting on this?
Oh, God, no. I've never liked the coaches' poll when Steve Spurrier came out and said, look, I don't even fill out my ballot. I have some kid do it for me. That pretty much put the nail in the coffin. You know, I have a really tough time, as you guys were saying, trusting the coaches because I don't think they actually do watch it. You know, it would be impossible for them to watch every team because they have to focus so much on their own team. And I don't think you can leave it up to us, the fans, because there are fans out there that are insanely biased. You see it all the time when ESPN does their, you know, rank your own top 25, and all of a sudden, you know, Ohio has 14 first-place votes, and all you're sitting there thinking is, what? But, I think the coaches' polls should be thrown in to, like, thrown in statistically, kind of like the BCS, but I don't think they should get to pick it. I like the idea of former coaches picking it. I also am not mined by conference commissioners having a say. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see what actually happens through all this.
Well, you know, when you start looking at conference commissioners, I mean, they're as biased as anyone. Look at Delaney in the Big Ten. Look at Slive in the SEC. I mean, those two are the biggest conference homers there are out there. So I just don't like coaches, commissioners being involved just because I just don't think any of them are honest. And the coaches, some there are. There's a few that are honest. But, you know, they said that if the coaches published, if every week they published, you know, who they voted for, that would fix it. But that's not going to make the coaches watch the game straight. The coaches, they don't have time. And can you imagine them losing a game and it's because they've been studying other teams and watching too many games to vote on those polls?
Yeah, I mean, there's really no way I think that becomes a system that really is fair, Tarvin. I really, you know, that you've had enough of a look of for this coach to have looked at the teams enough to have made an honest assessment and a fair assessment for what team needs to be for. I think, you know, when we're talking about 1 and 2, you know, there's probably not going to be a whole lot of fight. But we're really talking about the 3 and 4 spots. And so, you know, I think that you need a panel. It needs to be folks who watch enough college football, are so familiar with the game, but necessarily aren't allegiant to one specific area.
And Trey, you know, looking at, you know, forever, the Final Four in basketball, you know how popular that was. Most teams, if you can just get to the Final Four, I mean, that's huge for especially a coach putting it on their resume that they're a Final Four coach. But tell me about this Final Four in football. How big of a deal is this going to be for coaches, actually?
Well, I mean, this is going to become, this is, you know, the BCS, there's been, you know, each team, each conference keeps up with BCS. You know, what's the conference rating and, you know, what are their win losses in the BCS? You know, how many times has that coach gotten to the BCS? And so it's going to be one of those benchmarks for elite coaches to get into. You know, it's kind of funny, as college football has evolved, you know, there's been a new benchmark for the coach of, you know, for greatness in a coach, and now we're going to have a brand new one, Tarvin, and it's going to be, you know, like let's say Mac Brown, Tarvin, who you've been very vocal about whether he needs to be replaced. So let's say 3 years go by and he still has a job, and he's not gotten to that Final Four. I think you're going to start talking about, well, maybe he's not, you know, if you're Texas and he's still there, it's going to be, why can't we get there? So I think there's going to be a lot of these elite programs who are going to have that barometer of, hey, we should be getting into this Final Four.
Yeah, Jonathan, I mean, the Final Four in this, in football, tell me, and I mean, I heard people say about basketball, well, you have to win 5 games in basketball, so it's a big deal. But what about football? I mean, you have to win 12 or 13 games, really, to get in that Final Four. There's a possibility you can lose one game and you're out.
Yeah, I think it's great for coaches that make it. It'll be a great benchmark to also show who's a great coach, who's a great recruiter, things like that. Especially if they're there every year, I think it'll be extremely beneficial to college football all the way around. I think that this 4-team playoff is just a fantastic idea. I love it. I've been asking for it for a while. You know, it's just something that's really going to do wonders for the sport. I think it'll be great for coaches to be able to stamp that on their resume, because to get into the Final Four as a coach means that you're pretty darn good. You had to win X number of games every year. So, you know, I think you could definitely put in, like, bonuses and things like that for it. It'd be fantastic.
So Trey, looking at just, I want you to pretend that this 4-team playoff is coming up in 2013. If you're Alabama, are you worried? I know you talked about how weak their out-of-conference schedule was, and actually I believe Alabama has the weakest schedule of any SEC team, correct, Trey?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that is really going on right now. We talk about, you know, with the dead era of college football. It's been a really quiet time, not a whole lot of arrest and that kind of stuff. So people have really started talking about, hey, you know, let's go ahead and start looking at these schedules for teams. And one of the things that some of the SEC coaches have said and all the SEC fans have been talking about is, hey, you know, Alabama, 2-time national champion in a back-to-back, why are they playing such a cupcake schedule for the SEC? It's hard, but anytime you play an SEC schedule, of course it's going to be tough, but you got to look at their schedule, and if you're an Alabama fan, you're talking about their chances this year. I mean, you have to be really happy. I mean, their out-of-conference is Chattanooga, Georgia State, Colorado State. Other than the Virginia Tech game, that's not a whole lot of competition for the old Crimson Tide, Tarvin.
Well, I think a lot of teams are going to start, like you said, looking at those schedules. Even though the SEC is the toughest conference right now, just imagine if you had just a one-loss LSU team that was playing against, you know, a one-loss Ohio State, maybe coming, you choosing those two teams, and LSU had 4 cupcakes out of conference on their schedule, and say Ohio State played 2 real tough out of conference games. That's where it's going to get some of these teams. And when you're looking at that team compared to someone close, so Alabama, just by their name alone, Trey, they're going to be fine no matter what. They could play 4 of those Georgia State and Chattanoogas, and they're going to be fine just because of their name. But it's kind of like an 04 when Auburn got left out. They got left out because they played Citadel. When you looked at Oklahoma's out-of-conference schedule, it was Bowling Green. So in that instance, it was important they're out-of-conference schedule. And I think we're going to run into that again, Jonathan, you know, in the next few years.
Oh, very much so. I mean, the Big Ten already came out and said no more FCS schools, which I think is a huge step towards it. You know, I have been picking on Bama about this OCC for a while. I have. Because I saw two Division II teams. When I see Georgia State and I see Chattanooga, and I just shake my head and go, you know, how are the defending national champs getting away with this? You know, how does nobody not step up and say, hey, no, just no. You guys need to be playing a schedule like Ohio State, who Ohio State's not playing 1 FCS team this year, I believe. So, you know, we need to really start really incorporating a checks and balances system when it comes to the scheduling, because we're kind of letting teams walk. And then Alabama wins the championship, and their SEC schedule isn't the toughest around. So where's the parity everybody keeps begging for?
Well, I think the parity is so hard to, when you look at teams, I mean, like you say, Ohio State, maybe they have no FCS teams, but if you look at their conference schedule, it's very weak, where you look at Alabama, they're playing Chattanooga, but then you look at the conference schedule, it's weak compared to some other SEC teams, but you still have to play those games, and it's the toughest conference in America, Trey, so I need to put y'all on hold. Trey, go ahead and take over just 1 second, please.
Yeah, and Trevin, what my problem with Alabama and their out-of-conference schedule this year is, you know, we've already talked about, you know, they have the Virginia Tech game, which is great. I mean, it's not only great for Alabama, it's great for their strength of schedule, and it's great for the SEC and the ACC and our college football fans alike. But they don't have Georgia, South Carolina, or Florida on the schedule this year. And so their SEC schedule and their overall strength of schedule is going to be a lot weaker, depending on whether some of those other opponents have resurgent years. I mean, obviously, there's something in the water at Kentucky. We'll see if it transcends the game to the actual field. I mean, and who knows what happens with Ole Miss this year. So, I mean, there's a chance, Jonathan, that you know, there's some tougher games that we're not seeing right now. But without playing Georgia, South Carolina, and Florida from the East, that schedule does not look all that tough.
Oh, and you're 100% correct. And when I looked at the schedule, Tarvin posted that over-under for the teams on the Facebook page. I'm staring at it, I'm looking at it, and I'm like, okay, well, I can see this team having this many wins. And then I actually looked at their schedule, and all of a sudden I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, whoa, wait a second. How did Kentucky, you know, Vanderbilt, Missouri, how did the bottom of the conference wind up with the toughest schedule, with the tougher schedules? How is that possible? Shouldn't Alabama, LSU, Florida, Georgia have the tougher ones? I mean, what's going on here? I looked at A&M's schedule and I stared it down. And I just kind of shook my head when I looked at it. It's kind of ridiculous how the big boys in the SEC kind of got off. And obviously, you know, I've been saying this for a while, but that's because the SEC is top heavy and the conference realizes that. And they want to make sure they get somebody in the championship. So they find their preseason favorite, they find their big boy, and they kind of hand them a favorable conference schedule. They're going to do it because they want the national championship. It's all about, you know, the SEC getting, what, 8 in a row now?
Yeah. So let me ask you this, Jonathan, and Charmin, you're back on. Should the SEC, the ACC, the Big Ten, whoever these conferences are, and I know there's some sort of mathematical algorithm they use to determine when Florida plays, you know, and somebody in the West, and, you know, it's so many every year. But should they look at, you know, almost like an NFL-type schedule where, hey, the better teams from the previous year are going to kind of forced to play the tougher schedule in the next year?
I would love that. I think it'd be perfect. That would have matched up Florida with A&M. That would have had another Florida A&M game this year. That would have put Georgia and Bama together. I think that'd be great. South Carolina LSU would have been perfect. You know, you need to do the whole strength of schedule thing. That, you know, that's the way it's got to be. I mean, New England went from having the 32-ranked schedule, 32, the weakest schedule in the NFL last year, to having number 14 this year. So you need to see that every year. We need to see the change. And I think this is the way to do it. It really would. I love it. It's a great idea, man.
Well, Trey, you know, looking at Alabama, say, is it going to make any difference whether they play in Georgia State, Chattanooga, or say Bowling Green or Washington State or somebody like that? The end result's going to be the same. It's going to be a blowout. And so I think some people put too much emphasis on that out-of-conference schedule sometimes. If you watch Alabama play in these national championship games, I mean, they are just dominating anybody they play in any bowl game usually except that Utah game. So really, is out of conference schedule something a main thing they should look at, because it's really not a barometer of how good a team is?
Well, Tarvin, it's going to be very important when you have a 4-team playoff, and there's no doubt about it. One of the things that's going to be used is strength of schedule, and when you have, you know, the SEC conference, and you're in the West, and you miss the three big boys in the East, you need somebody. Now, granted, this isn't the year, Tarvin, but also, there's the factor of, you know, home versus away, and they're not scheduling folks they got to go on the road to. I mean, even the Virginia Tech game is at a neutral site. Not one of their out-of-conference games are on the road. So those are the kind of things that I think this committee, I mean, if I was on the committee, I would start paying a lot of attention to, even if you are in the SEC, and especially if you're in the SEC and you're in the West and you don't play Florida, Georgia, or South Carolina in a season. So, Tarvin, I think it is going to be very important. And, you know, especially if, you know, the SEC stays strong and you're looking at, you know, maybe two teams getting in, if you're on that third bubble, you're not going to be anywhere near the conversation if you're in the SEC and you're not playing those games at a conference.
That's a good point. And guys, I want to get the call-in number 646-716-5564 if you'd like to call and weigh in. We're going to go about another half hour. And, again, we are the Staff Pick Show on Blog Talk Radio, so thanks again for that. If you want to follow us on Twitter, at Weigh In Sports, Trey's keeping up with that all the time. He does a great job. Jonathan's also on there playing around. So guys, the main topic for tonight I want to get to is Ohio State. You know, every year, it seems like the last few, someone's going out on a limb, Jonathan, and they're picking a Big Ten team, a Pac-12 team, someone, and putting them ahead of Alabama or LSU. So tell me, is Ohio State a worthy team to have that number one ranking, or would you put them two or three right now?
You know, I would put Ohio State two. I just don't see a complete team there. Obviously, last year they did not have a receiving threat. If Braxton Miller goes down with an injury, Ohio State loses a lot. They actually lost a lot of key players on defense. It's a very, very interesting team to look at, and they're coached by Urban Meyer, and that's why people are saying, you know, look out for Ohio State this year. It's Urban Meyer. It's always, you know, right. It's always, you know, he always seems to get his teams the national picture, whether it was Utah, whether it, you know, Florida. He got two championships there, and now they're expecting him to win one Ohio State. That whole, you know, he'll bring Southern football to the North. I'm not entirely sure about that. I'm not sold on Ohio State yet. I wasn't impressed with them last year. Even though they went 12-0, I was not impressed. It did not look like a 12-0 team to me.
No, and I'm going to tell you something right now. And, Trey, I'm going to get your opinion on this. Urban Meyer, he left the game from the SEC at first after Saban spanked him and humiliated him. And then he comes back and tries to act like he's going to come back, and Saban does it again. And now he runs away claiming he wants to spend time with his family, in which he never did. He took a job with ESPN immediately. So my theory is, Trey, he was a coward. He left the SEC because he didn't want to be Saban's whipping boy anymore. I think now he's going up north to think that he can make a championship. He can get in the championship game, Trey. That's not going to be a problem looking at that schedule. But do you honestly think he could beat the SEC team that he played in a championship? Come on.
Well, I mean, Ohio State has a lot of talent, and there's no doubt about that. But are they a team that is sort of, I guess, complete, as Jonathan said, as some of the SEC teams that we've seen make the national championship game? Well, at least based on last year's results, I would say no. Now, Braxton Miller, now this kid came out of high school was such a highly talented guy, and he's certainly playing pretty well in college football, Tarvin. I mean, this guy could be the elite type of quarterback to actually win a game all by himself and win a big game. He's not going to have a lot of tests this year. I mean, that schedule, granted, there's no FCS schools on there, Tarvin, but there's not exactly a lot of big games for us to really judge how good this team is going to be. I mean, I don't know how good the Cal Bears are going to be, but they're on the road. At least that's going to give us some look at Ohio State on the road. But until the Wisconsin game, but that Wisconsin game's at home. This is a schedule, it really could be that Wisconsin game and then maybe Northwestern if they're still as good as we saw last year in October before we actually see what this team is made of, Tarvin. And other than that, I mean, they go all the way until they're at Ann Arbor in November 30th before we see another matchup that I would want to watch. So, they're going to have an easy schedule, Tarvin.
Yeah, the schedule is why Ohio State, I think a lot of people are putting Ohio State up there, is because of that cakewalk schedule. Their toughest game on the road is Michigan. I mean, they have Wisconsin at home, Penn State at home, but they do have to play the Big Ten championship if they make it. But, guys, come on, let's get real. Braxton Miller is a good quarterback. I mean, he's a good quarterback. How much did he improve, Jonathan, from last year to this year? That's the question. Even though he improved a lot, that defense took a hit, lost six of its front seven, the starters off of it. I think it lost a total of seven on the defense. And I know the Big Ten's not an offensive conference or anything, but that's hard to replace. But, again, this is Urban Meyer's second year in this system with this team. But I'm under that impression, Jonathan, that without Dan Mullen, Urban Meyer's nothing as a coach. He hasn't won anything without Dan Mullen.
Well, Urban Meyer coached for Florida, and we know I'm a Florida State fan, so I don't have much nice to say about him. But I have a lot of friends who are Florida Gator fans, and I felt bad for him when Meyer left. And I saw immediately why Meyer left. It wasn't because he lost to Bama. Let's get that you know, misconception out of our head right now. It was because Tebow graduated. Now, I don't know if you guys noticed, but Alex Smith, all right, right after Alex Smith graduated from Utah, he had Alex all 4 years, rode Alex all 4 years. He jumps from Utah to Florida. He has Tebow for those 4 years. As soon as Tebow graduates, he jumps. He goes to Ohio State, where he knows he's going to have Braxton Miller. Now, I want to see what happens when Braxton Miller leaves, because unless he brings in a quarterback that he's in love with, I bet you money he's out. Because, you know, Cam Newton was going to be his next guy at Florida, and Cam Newton got in trouble. If Cam Newton never gets in trouble, Urban Meyer never leaves Florida, and Auburn doesn't win a championship. So I think that's where we need to watch. That's where we need to watch.
I agree with that, Jonathan. Auburn wouldn't have won a championship without Cam Newton, no doubt. But I'm going to tell you this. He left. You're right about the quarterback situation. But he left because I think he realized, oh, my God, I work 100 hours a week, and this Nick Saban guy, there's no beating him. I think that's what Urban Meyer said. He was stressed. His outlook was bad. He made a decision that he probably shouldn't have made at the time. He panicked. He left. He made a mistake. But, Trey, him leaving had everything to do with Nick Saban, I'm telling you. You could see it in his eyes on the sidelines. He almost bowed down to Nick Saban and prayed to him almost.
Well, I mean, I don't know what his real reasons were, but I agree with Jonathan. I mean, I think that he's the kind of guy who latches himself on to a certain player or to, the loyalty with him seems to be very based on exactly who he thinks is in the pipeline. And if he thinks for a year or two that it's not there, I mean, Urban Meyer's liable to go try his luck out at USC. I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see with him. I'm not looking at him as my 10-year coach.
Well, Trey, even with Tebow, without Dan Mullen, that offense was terrible. I don't know if you remember that or not. I think they lost five games. And it's because Dan Mullen was such a great offensive coordinator that he had that offense running perfect. When Urban Meyer was in charge of it, I mean, it sucked. I mean, it really did. Tim Tebow was a part of the reason he left. It's a part of it. But I think him realizing how much of a toll it's going to take on your health to coach in the SEC and to win, that's too much. I like Urban Meyer. I mean, I don't hate the guy. I mean, he's a good coach. He's a great recruiter. For some reason, these kids buy into what he's selling. And thank God for Cam Newton buying that stolen laptop, Jonathan, and throwing it out the window, or we would have never had a championship at all. I just had to say that. Go ahead, Jonathan. I'm sorry.
The Gators lost five. The year the Gators went 8-5, they lost to Michigan and Capital One Bowl. Was 07, the year after they won the championship with Chris Leak and all them. Tebow won the Heisman that year, where he had the 50 total touchdowns, yada, yada, yada. And then 08 and 09, they were stuck. I mean, 08, they won the title. 09, they lost. If they beat Bama in the SEC championship game, then they're playing Texas, which I think they still, you know, no matter what, they beat Texas. So I don't know if Dan Mullen had that much of an effect on it as did the talent and Urban Meyer kind of not getting the talent he wanted after that championship run.
Well, Trey, I heard a lot of people say that Urban Meyer left the cupboard empty for Will Muschamp at Florida. Do you agree with that?
Well, I mean, I don't know if he left it empty to Urban, but he certainly didn't leave it as well as I've seen other programs get left. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Muschamp had a lot of talent, especially on the defensive end that he was left with.
Yeah, he was. And, I mean, you know, a lot of things can go on in your life, you know, to cause you to not recruit as much or as well or to prepare as well as you did. I think Urban Meyer's health was a part of it. I want people to understand I'm not just bashing Urban Meyer. I think he did have bad health, and I think it was because he was a perfectionist and he wanted to win. See, what he did is he's taken that SEC mentality, what it's going to take to win in the SEC, and he's taking it up north, Jonathan. And once he gets there, he starts pulling these tricks out of his hat. You know, these Big Ten coaches are very uncomfortable with the change he brought. You know, most of the time these Big Ten guys, they get a recruit. It's a gentleman's agreement. You don't chase after him. Urban comes in there and steals about five or six recruits the last week of signing day, and it caused a big ruckus. Do you think Urban Meyer coming up there is the reason Brett Bielema left Wisconsin, Jonathan?
Yeah, I do. I don't think Bielema would have left Wisconsin if Urban Meyer hadn't shown up. Bielema was going to be the next Barry Alvarez up there. Why would you want to leave that? So I full-heartedly believe that's one of the reasons. I can't dispute that notion at all.
Trey?
I'll be honest. I mean, what Urban Meyer is doing to the Big Ten is good for the Big Ten. I mean, the way they handled recruiting was so different than the SEC that it was clear that they were lagging behind. But whether Brett Bielema left Wisconsin, I'm not so sure there wasn't some sort of internal disagreement between him and you know, the folks up at Wisconsin. But I also think he's the type of guy that wanted the big-time challenge. He wanted to know, could he cut it? Could he bring his offense, his big boy style, out of the SEC and have success? I think he's the kind of guy who actually wants that big-time show. And I think, you know, losing as many times as he did in the BCS, which was Wisconsin, sort of showed him what his level of that he could achieve at Wisconsin. He wasn't going to win a national championship. That was kind of the best he was going to be able to make it. So I think he went down into the SEC territory where he thinks he can win a championship.
Trey, I'm going to take a caller real quick from the 718 area code. You're on Way in Sports. Who's this?
Oh, how you doing, man? My name is William Martin. I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York. How are things going, man?
Good. How's it going?
Good, man. I was just chiming in, man, because I think the main reason why Urban Meyer left the SEC is the fact that, you know, he realized that he couldn't clean up as far as the recruits in the same way that he did prior to Nick Saban arriving at Alabama. One guy that really stands out for me was Julio Jones. And in that recruiting class, that was going to be the guy for Urban Meyer to keep things rolling. And when Julio Jones decided to stay in state and go to Alabama, it was kind of like game on from that point. And he knew that he wasn't going to get the same type of guys. Now, the fact that being that he is a native of Ohio, going back to coach Ohio State after the whole Jim Tressel debacle, the Big Ten, it's not as strenuous, as far as recruiting as it would be down in the SEC. You could have one bad recruiting class in the SEC, and that 12-1 can turn around and be 8-5 in a heartbeat. So Urban Meyer knew what he was doing. I really think he did what was best for Urban Meyer. And, you know, just to touch on Brett Bielema leaving Wisconsin in favor of Arkansas, I think it came down to money. Because if you look at Wisconsin over the years, whether it was Brett Bielema, whether it was Barry Alvarez, they never really went after those top-tier recruits. The biggest recruit in the last 20 years probably at Wisconsin was Ron Dayne. And the reason why Barry Alvarez got Ron Dayne was the fact that every other school that wanted him at the Division I level wanted to make him into a fullback. And Barry Alvarez basically told him, okay, you know, if you come out here, I'll let you be a running back. And then, of course, you know, Bielema is a disciple of Barry Alvarez. So I just think it was money as far as Bielema leaving Wisconsin and going down to Arkansas.
All right. Well, man, I appreciate the call and the input. Great stuff. Seems like we agree a lot on the same thing. So, Trey, I like this caller right here. I'm in favor of him calling back. So call in anytime. Appreciate the call. Trey, he made some good points right there about the money. And, you know, when the SEC comes calling, they can afford to pay the money. They make a lot of money. I mean, they spend a lot of money on football, whether it's facilities, coaches, or whatever. So these guys aren't afraid. And you look at Arkansas with the Bobby Petrino thing, and then John L. Smith coming in, these guys were looking to make a home run hire. And I believe they did, Trey. I believe Arkansas hired the best coaches they could at that point.
Well, I mean, I think his way that he coaches and his style of offense and defense actually is a sort of a recipe for some possible success for Arkansas. I mean, you got big boys who like to block. He goes out and he wants big, fast running backs who like to run the football. He likes to play pretty much sound defense. I mean, Tarvin, does that not sound like the SEC?
It does, and I think he's cocky enough to actually coach in the SEC and do well, Jonathan. I mean, I think you have to have some kind of arrogance about yourself in the SEC in a way. It seems like that those coaches do the best.
Yeah, I mean, it's true, and I also, you know, we have to bring up the point that he left Wisconsin for Arkansas, and I don't know if Arkansas is exactly what you would consider a top-tier school nationwide. So I do agree with guy who called in that, yeah, money probably had a huge impact in it, and I don't think Bielema wanted to deal with Meyer. I mean, I think everybody who's discussed this tonight's really hit it right on the head.
Yeah, it's a great show, man. That's why we're staff pick, because we know our college football, Trey. That's one thing we love on this show. And before we get off, we're going to get off Ohio State and Urban Meyer. And I just want to talk just a minute about some recruiting. You know, Florida State's doing well and looking good, and I'll let Trey, you and Jonathan talk about that in a minute. But Oklahoma State's quarterback decides to transfer, Trey, and now the school is playing hardball with him in a way, saying he can't transfer to three schools they named. And those three schools have nothing to do with Oklahoma State, never going to be on the schedule or anything. So what is Oklahoma State trying to do to this kid but not letting him transfer to a school of his choice?
Well, I mean, they limited the two SEC schools and then Southern Miss. I think Southern Miss was a direct sort of if you look at how schools have done this in the past with transfers, one of the things they've always done is that you can't go to the school, basically, that, you know, we just lost our OC to. So that's what I think, that's the real reason for Lunt not being able to go to Southern Miss. Not that I think it would have been a smart choice to choose Southern Miss, but the two SEC schools, those are the ones that I guess the justification isn't so obvious. Other than maybe they don't want him to go and compete at a big-time level, even though the SEC schools that he was considering weren't exactly top, you know, the top of the – of the SEC. So those are the two that I couldn't find a clear reason why, Tarvin, and sort of, you know, I haven't seen in the past where, you know, a whole conference was taken off, a player's list.
Yeah, I think these players, I think it should be an example. These schools are trying to deter kids in the future from doing this. I think they're trying to send a message to next year's class and a year after's class that says, hey, here at Oklahoma State, you know, you commit to us, you commit. If you decide to leave, that's your choice, but we're going to make it very difficult, you know, where you go to play. But, Trey, couldn't the kid transfer to, say, JUCO and go play a year there, and then he can come back anywhere he wants, correct?
Well, I mean, I don't know if he's going to – I mean, the problem with that is obviously, you're talking – Wes Blount was a really big-time prospect. I mean, this kid's apparently got legitimate college football talent. So, I mean, any year you lose of eligibility – or any year that you spend out of the game is a year that, you know, you're losing a skill set. So I think that, you know, for him, it looks like he wants to stay in a program that's relevant. So that's why he's trying. And, you know, whether it was the offensive coordinator leaving and after that he doesn't have as good of a relationship with the team, but, you know, obviously the team has their interest, but also you kind of understand the perspective of the quarterback, because you have a guy who came in with an offensive coordinator and a certain scheme in mind. That guy leaves, and now as a quarterback, he's thinking, well, man, I don't know if I even like this new system.
Jonathan, your thoughts?
I kind of understood it, because who wants to help out the SEC, right? He would have replaced Tyler Bray at Tennessee, would have replaced Jordan Rogers at Vanderbilt. So he probably would have had playing time right away. But Southern Miss, I understand. I don't, you know, this kind of is reminiscent of the whole Matthew Thomas situation to me, where, you know, instead of us letting Matthew Thomas walk, we told him, we're waiting till your mom gets home, we're going to talk about this, and we're probably still not going to let you walk. We're probably still going to keep you here, whether you like it or not, so just suck it up and deal with it. Now, to look at this, looking at this kid, he was a good quarterback for Oklahoma State last year. You know, make no bones about it. He was not a bad quarterback. And obviously, Oklahoma State is pretty successful, but Oklahoma State had three good quarterbacks on the roster, and I think that became the problem. Was he saw that he was in the middle of a situation that was A, tough, and B, he had already lost in the spring game. So, you know, you got to kind of let the kid walk. The only question becomes, do you actually want him to go somewhere where he can affect you? And if you let him go to, like, a Purdue, yeah. Are you ever going to play Purdue?
That's the thing.
They could possibly deal with Tennessee.
Yeah, that's the thing. When you start looking at your schedules, Trey, that's what happens. But I'll get back to that. I'll follow this and see what school he goes to, and we'll discuss it. Let's talk about Notre Dame just for a second. With all of this, you know, conference expansions going on, Trey, you see all of these conferences getting larger and larger. It looks like it could easily Notre Dame make a BCS bowl, or Notre Dame doesn't get in a bowl. What do you think about that, Trey? Do you like that, or do you dislike it?
Well, I mean, I think that's not going to happen for Notre Dame because they're way too big of a cash cow for any bowl game. But it is they're sort of looking at less and less options. And that story broke, you know, this past week. And, you know, I kind of wonder how much of that writing on the wall Notre Dame is taking seriously, and that's why this affiliation with the ACC may get stronger. Or how much of this stuff is just, you know, it's the doldrums of college football season. So let's look into something. But you know, I think Notre Dame will find a bowl. I don't see this whole scenario really playing out that way.
Well, Trey, it might not be that nobody. I mean, it's not that someone doesn't want Notre Dame if they're already taken by, you know, obligations to fill, say, certain conferences now. As big as they are, getting more teams now, Jonathan. So it's not necessarily that you don't want Notre Dame in your bowl. It's that you can't have Notre Dame in your bowl because there's not enough room for them.
That was the scenario that brought up. But, you know, this is one of those things where it's like, well, if Armageddon happens, no, you know, this is what happens. Well, if for some reason every team in a BCS conference qualifies for, you know, for a bowl game, then Notre Dame doesn't get a bowl. Well, we're assuming that 10 teams from the SEC and 10 teams from the ACC and 10 teams from the Big 12. You see what I'm saying? We're assuming, you know, we're talking about 50 schools here are going to qualify, and I think that number is a little outlandish. Now, the ACC has come out and said that they are working on an agreement with Notre Dame to where they would be allowed to fit into their tie-ins for the bowl games as long as whoever they're replacing actually has a better record. So instead of seeing Georgia Tech and, you know, the Chick-fil-A Bowl at 7-7, we can see Notre Dame at 10-2 in it. That's the discussion that's happening right now. Do I think Notre Dame should be in a bowl game? Well, yeah, of course. I mean, geez, their fan base is so huge and they make so much money that not put them in a bowl game would just be ridiculous by the NCAA and be the complete opposite of what they've shown us the past couple of years. So I think Notre Dame will get their bowl game. I think it'll be an ACC bid. I just think that right now this whole they're not going to get a bowl bid, Armageddon, we need to cool the jets on that one.
All right. Thanks, Jonathan. Just looking at college football, though, it has become about the money, Trey, and that's one thing that these bowl games are all about. It's not about who are the best teams to match up. It's who's going to travel the best, who's going to come. But honestly, do you think Notre Dame fans would travel to some crap bowl up in Nashville, Tennessee, maybe, after playing for a national championship and this past season? And the standards of Notre Dame seems to be a lot higher than most other teams.
Well, I mean, Notre Dame has historically traveled well to any bowl. I mean, that's, you know, whether it was, you know, the Emerald Bowl or whatever it is. I mean, Notre Dame is a school that has fan base all throughout the country. It's a, you know, it's a big time program. So I think that they're going to have the money. I think Jonathan's right. They're going to have the tie-in eventually. The ACC will allow them to get a tie-in. I think that's in the monetary best interest of both affiliation. So I think this is the scenario isn't going to happen, Tarvin.
Yeah, some good stuff, some good conversation. But I think Notre Dame, you know, national championship runs are, I think that was a fluke. I think it was a lot of luck. So I think they'll be looking for other bowl games. But the BCS bowls will take these guys if they're somewhat even decent. So that's one thing that's scary about the BCS, actually. They want that money, man. They want that travel money. All these fans will travel. They'll pay hotel bills. Everybody will actually travel, and that's the thing. When I went to the Auburn-Oregon game, I mean, it was like every Oregon fan and every Auburn fan in the world was there, and I was surprised that so many people made that trip and how far away it was for actually both schools. But could you imagine, you know, Notre Dame playing in the Rose Bowl, Trey? If they make a national championship, they're going, their entire fan base. These bowls are all about those hotel rooms, these restaurants, their economy. It's hard to beat a Notre Dame, Trey.
Absolutely, Tarvin. 100% agree.
All right. Enough about football. Trey, anything in closing right now before we go?
Yeah, Tarvin, just real quick, not really to really talk about, but, you know, watch out for Miguel Cabrera. I'll be honest, I had Robbie Cano winning. He was my preseason MVP for the AL. But I'm looking at Cabrera this year, and he's on pace to actually better his numbers from the Triple Crown MVP season last year. He's already had 2 home runs tonight. Tarvin, I think this guy may do it again.
Well, he is on my fantasy team, and it's still not enough to help me win, though. So, Jonathan, anything in closing you want to talk about?
Actually, I want to see Matt Moore. I don't know if you guys know. He went 8-0. He is 8-0 right now. He won again today against Baltimore. Gave up only one earned run, which lowered his ERA again, you know, from like a 1.7 to a 1.6. I want to see how long he can actually go before he takes his first loss. I think the run Matt Moore on right now is fantastic, and it's covering up the already debacle of a season David Price has given us.
Yeah, that's a good point, and this is a good picture. It's a good story. I guess I'm going to close with the Braves. You know, looking at the Braves, they were in trouble. They actually started playing below average baseball, and all of a sudden they sweep the Dodgers, Trey. And the Dodgers, they're not a powerhouse right now, but anytime you can get a sweep coming off a sweep of your own, that's some good stuff. So I'm just watching the Braves to see if they can make that acquisition at the All-Star break to get a 300-hitter, or possibly some bullpen help, Trey. Do you think that's what they need in order to make a run in the second half?
Yeah, they're going to need bullpen help for sure, Tarvin. Absolutely, they're going to need it. With vendors going out, they're going to need it, Tarvin. But the sweep of the Dodgers is great. They didn't face any of the big three from the Dodgers, so they picked up wins that they should have gotten, which is what you want to see from a good team.
Yeah, and the Braves are one of those teams right now. You know, they're young. But at any time, they could turn it on. But without pitching, you have no shot. And, again, I want to thank Blog Talk Radio for staff picking our show tonight. We appreciate the love. We try to bring every week we do it. We try to bring good stuff, good conversation. I want to thank Jonathan and Trey tonight for joining me on this show. It was a good one, I think. You know, we're going to cut it short an hour. But, hey, I don't want to, you know, to water it down, Trey, and talk about things that nobody really wants to talk about. So, I want to thank y'all for coming on, even though it was just an hour show. Go to blogtalkradio.com/Tarvino, and you can follow us on Blog Talk Radio. That way you'll get all of our updates, any changes to a show, any scheduling of a show. But, Trey, you and Jonathan, you have a great week, and we'll see you next Sunday, bud.
See you, bud.
Bye, guys.
See y'all.